you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Lars.
On today's Going In Raw News Brief, we review New Japan's new beginning in Hiroshima Night 1 and last night's Impact Wrestling. And we preview tonight's AEW Dynamite at NXT. But first, John Cena responds to Undertaker calling WWE talent soft. Larson, what's in the news?
So you might recall, well, you and everybody, might recall, yeah, everyone, that about 3 weeks ago during appearance on the Joe Rogan Experience, The Undertaker referred to the current pro wrestling product as
soft. They don't carry knives and guns in their bags. Not real men.
And then about a week after that, Goldberg seemed to agree with The Undertaker while speaking with Corey Graves on After the Bell. But Steve, there is finally, a pro wrestling legend who has come to the defense of today's product. John Cena declares that he loves what's going on in today's WWE during an interview with friendo Alfred Kanawa of Forbes. This is what Cena had to say. Steve, go ahead.
What a mark. He said this. I viewed the WWE as a product outside of myself for a long time. I guess that's why I was so interested in the business side of it from very early on in my career. In that, I'm just going to take a brief aside here. His quotes always come off as essays, as think pieces. So keep that in mind here. In that, I've seen it evolve, but I've also been called everything that's ruined sports entertainment. I could look at the economics of it and make an argument that between myself and the large amount of folks that carried on the roster beyond the Attitude Era into the Ruthless Aggression Era and the Reality Era, the fans of the Attitude Era certainly looked at our product as not what they're used to, and it wasn't. So I may have a bit of disagreement with The Undertaker's word choice because I don't think it's soft. I think it's different. I think it's bold. It's forcing people to take chances. Forbes did an article on me back in 2020 where I had said that I don't believe that WWE will ever have a marquee star. And here we are less than a year later, and I can blatantly say I was wrong. You want to talk about being too close to the product? I was just too close. Having seen it, having lived it myself, I should have just realized that the company is in transition. It takes a long time. I would say it's 3.5 years or more to build a certain talent because I've walked in those shoes. Now you have Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns. Sasha Banks can be in that conversation, but it's not what I said it was in 2020. It's not a scattered fragment of super friends. WWE has just refocused, reshifted, and now is consolidating on marquee stars. They have their marquee stars, and going forward, they will have their big names. As far as those names being larger than life, the enormity of their impact is up to the individuals themselves.
And he kind of goes into like the self-help quotes there at the end a little bit.
Yeah.
If you follow John Cena on Twitter, that's basically all it is.
Yeah, he loves that stuff. So yeah, agree or disagree with the doctor of Thugonomics, Larson?
At least in the first part about referencing Undertaker's comments about the product being soft, I'm in agreement with Cena. I don't think the product is soft. I don't think wrestlers are soft. It is just different. Like any storytelling medium, like any art form, it has to continually evolve or it gets stagnant and it gets stale and then people stop tuning in. Now, you can say from the creative side of things that might have already happened, but in terms of the abilities, the talents of the in-ring performers, the quality of the in-ring product of WWE has never been better across the board.
Yeah,
across the board. As far as WWE not having marquee stars, they do. And I think in a sense, you know, WWE, they have been criticized, and I think largely rightly, for not developing stars, given the depth of talent on their roster. That being said, he names three who, and you could add Becky Lynch to this list easily as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who are on the precipice of maybe crossing over into the mainstream. Sasha Banks, for sure. She's already in The Mandalorian. She's going to have an action figure soon enough. That's awesome. So there's four names that over the last 5 years WWE has developed. So they could be on the verge of crossing over potentially to the mainstream. Now, will it happen? That's up in the air. I don't think it's solely up to the individual. As I said, the enormity of their impact is up to the individual themselves. I mean, I guess part of that, you know, whatever their ambitions are beyond wrestling. You know, obviously Sasha wanted to do some acting. She got into it. It was awesome. Same with Roman. He was in one of the Fast and Furious movies. If he ever decides to go back to Hollywood, do some acting, I'm sure it'll go really well for him. You know, in terms of WWE developing more and more household names like they did in the Attitude Era and prior, that's part of that is them kicking things up a notch in terms of their talent development thing. Because they got, we said countless times, there is at least a dozen people, men and women on the WWE roster who could be household names, huge crossover mainstream stars. At least a dozen, maybe more, if the creative behind them was consistently good, if the marketing from WWE was consistently excellent, if they were marketed or given opportunities to do stuff outside of WWE on a more regular basis, and how much of that is on WWE versus, you know, pop culture at large in terms of giving wrestlers those opportunities, it's there. It just doesn't seem like, for a variety of reasons, things have necessarily lined up for WWE to really develop mainstream stars in the number that seems like they should be able to do given the amount of talent they have on the roster right now.
I think if you look at it a bit more simply, I don't know what their Q scores are. Isn't that the thing that they measure? Mm-hmm. I don't know what those are.
Yep.
But I do think that maybe if he's looking at it, you know, from a distant standpoint over where he was feeling about the product. And I know he says he qualifies it by saying he feels that he was maybe too close to the product back then. And now he stepped back a little ways. I do think that there's been a significant shift in the names that he's mentioned in terms of them turning a corner at the beginning stage of what you would need for mainstream crossover success. Mm-hmm. I think another name that is clearly 3 years out from breaking through in terms of being a mainstream name is Bianca Belair. I think in 3 years, she's going to be everywhere, more so than Sasha is right now. But I do think that Becky Lynch had that huge crossover moment in 2020 where she, if COVID hadn't happened, yeah, we'd probably be talking about her being in Fast and Furious movies at this point. But COVID happened. She thought that was a good opportunity. Her and Seth felt that was a good opportunity to go and start a family. And that's awesome. I feel like she'll be back on track with that. If that's where she wants to go sooner than later. But I do think that from a standpoint of WWE has figured out certain characters. And I understand that, like, when you look at the ratings of Raw, for example, Drew McIntyre is not carrying Raw to new ratings heights. I don't know how much you can do as one person, even if you're the biggest star on the planet, in turning around a show that's 3 hours long and creatively is just lackluster and every single week.
And I mean, we see Edge popping up on all the WWE products, or Edge, you know, one of the you know, most popular stars WWE has probably developed over the last 20 years or so. Even he seems to have little impact on the ratings.
Yeah, I do. I think that Edge is one of those interesting names who is a massive star within WWE. But I never really thought that he was much of a solution in the first place. I thought it was great that he came back. WWE fans love him. I don't know that at the end of the day, 20 years from now, if Drew McIntyre fulfills his potential, I think he's going to be a bigger mainstream crossover name than Edge ever was. I think Edge is like one of the most decorated, I think the most decorated WWE champion.
If you take 24/7 title reigns out of it, yes.
Thank you. Or hardcore title reigns. Exactly. I think that that's the case. But I mean, afterwards, he got into acting. He did some stuff here and there. But there are certain people who can cross over and they're like, oh, yeah, I know that guy. And I think that, yeah, I think if they fulfill their potential, Roman Reigns, WWE has figured out. They have figured out. And when fans come back and they transition him, whether it's this year, late this year, next year, the year after that, when they transition him to being a face again, he's going to be the most over thing WWE has seen in a very long time. I think if the creative is there, especially when they transition him, he's going to be huge. And I think Cena might be talking about, you know, the fact that a year ago, they had just figured out Drew McIntyre when he beat Brock Lesnar. He'd really come into his own. He won the Rumble. They saw the reaction to that. And so you see a couple of these names, and it's like, okay, WWE, they need to be a bit savvier with the creative on Raw, especially. Yes. But yeah, all the tools are there for those guys to be mainstream stars to, you know, on the playgrounds when, you know, 10-year-olds have backpacks. Oh, I got my Drew McIntyre backpack. I think the potential's there. Whether or not WWE can actually capitalize on it is a whole nother story.
And I still think, I wonder if they're in a transition period from, it seemed like for a spell, their marketing philosophy was market the logo, market WWE. You know, we have an enormously talented roster of wrestlers. You know, and so you saw a lot of merchandise out there outside of toys where it was a huge WWE logo and then a bunch of wrestlers. But front and center was the logo. You know, it's like the old thought about NFL. They market the shield. They market the logo. Historically, over the last, you know, probably a couple decades, NFL has not been good in terms of marketing individual players. They market the league. And it seemed like for a while that might have been WWE's philosophy. Now, given the success they've had with Roman, you know, creatively, Sasha being at the Mandalorian, Becky crossing over into the mainstream, Drew seemingly have all the ability to do the same. Maybe now would be the time to pivot away from marketing strictly WWE, focusing on these stars who have a ton of potential to cross over into the mainstream and see if that leads anywhere.
I am curious, though. I am curious to know if that was a philosophy or if that was simply because they were unable to make big stars. I don't know. That's a question into itself. Interesting words from John Cena. Last night, we had the first new beginning in Hiroshima. There's going to be another one tonight. I thought that I'll be honest with you, man. I was a bit underwhelmed by kind of everything last night. To me, the high point was the opening match where the Young Lions took it to Suzuki-gun.
Umuro is damn impressive.
He's good. I love the Tsuji has a great look to him.
Yeah.
I love those dudes. I think they're going to be huge. I kind of want to understand, like, where are they going to end up when they go on Excursion Man? Because I kind of want to follow them wherever they're going and see their development. That's one thing I've never really done is, I know Shota is in Rev Pro right now, but I don't know how much they're actually running shows.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know.
But I like that Suzuki ended up getting the win, of course, tapping out. Or did he pass Umuro, out Umuro?
Umuro passed out, yeah, because he slapped the hell out of him and then put him in the single leg crab and passed out. But Umuro had a great showing. I was really impressed with him. Really impressed. He's
fantastic. They got a couple of young lions that are really, really impressive right now.
After that, Bushi taking on Master Wado. I was kind of expecting Master Wado to get the W here. But Bushi picked up the win. But this was a competitive match. It was pretty good. It was pretty solid. Bushi got the win with MX. It was fun. It was well done. Yeah. They're giving a lot, since they're doing fewer matches and they have kind of like a time limit on the shows, it seems like they're giving more matches opportunities to breathe. Yeah. Like even some of these tag matches early in their show felt like they were, you know, like 15 minutes.
Yeah. This next match was just an absolute mess of a match. Yeah. Bullet Club, LP, Ishimori, Evil, Tokyo Pimp, and Jay White, who I thought was going to have a much more featured role in this match. But this was almost comedy stuff here versus Chaos, Okada, Yano, Ishii, Goto, and Yoshihashi. But this was a mess. I mean, basically, this match exists for two reasons. Number one, to set up Jay White versus Ishii, which we know how that's going to go. And then, of course, Okada versus Evil. So Yano ended up getting a roll-up win on, I think, Tokyo Pimp. Is that right? For the win.
After a low blow, yeah.
And then Okada afterwards tried to goad Evil into the ring.
It looked like Okada was trying to keep himself from laughing this entire time.
He was.
He had a half smile on his face the entire time. Well, like Young Lions are trying to like get him away from the ringside area. Yeah. He's trying not to laugh.
When Evil rolled in and rolled back out, he's just sitting there like that, and he just looks like he's gonna laugh. It's goofy. I don't know when that singles match is going to happen, but
oh, probably a New Japan Cup. That's probably what they're building to. I think
that's what they were talking about on the road too. Yeah. I don't know. They might make it. They might. I don't know what it, does Castle Attack generally have any sort of theme to it. I wonder if that might headline Castle Attack. That's like a great
good name for a show.
It's a great name for a show. Yeah.
Next, Sonata, Tetsuya Naito, taking on Kota Ibushi and Hanma. Hanma eating another pin. Yeah, I haven't really seen the whole, apart from the other New Beginning show, I haven't seen a lot of the Road 2 ones. I'm assuming Hanma's eating a lot of pins during this this build up to New Beginning.
There was one match where he actually pinned, I think, Naito. It was like, you know, the perfect storm leading to that to happen. And they celebrated like it was Luger beating Yokozuna. Yeah. It was like everybody just completely, it was on one of the Road 2s and it was like a big, big deal. Hanma, when he moves around, it hurts because... That neck injury of his, like,
bad neck,
man.
He's got a bad neck.
He's got a bad neck. So, yeah, Naito ended up pinning Hanma after Destino. Mm-hmm. Can you think of a more mellow feud than Ibushi and Sonata at the end of this match when the ref gives Ibushi his titles back? He's in the ring, and it's just a shot with the two of them. And Sonata just sort of mills about, and then he just sort of puts his elbow on the apron, and he just sort of looks at the titles. And Ibushi just sort of started chatting him up a little bit, and Sonata's like, there's zero heat. Yeah, they fist bump. There's zero heat here.
That's kind of how I felt about Sho and Hiromu.
It was the same. It was the same.
And, like, the match was fine. I didn't feel invested because I didn't feel like there was any real... There's nothing personal going on there, you know?
Yeah, it was all just, it's all this spirit of competition stuff, but it just doesn't translate into any tension or drama. Usually, okay, you start off with like spirit of competition and then things get chippy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Things have gotten less chippy as these feuds have moved on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're going to, you know, start these matches, you know, enjoying some tea together or something.
Yeah, no, they're going to do some pre-match stretching in the ring before the match begins.
Right. Some casual banter, some bants.
Exactly. So this next match was chippy, but it was also really weird. So we got Dangerous Techers taking on Gorillas of Destiny. So Tama Tonga, he's been in the possession of the Iron Finger Glove since World Tag League. And so he's teasing Taichi about that. And so he has this giant bag, plastic bag. Inside are smaller paper bags.
They're like takeout bags, I think.
Yeah, filled with stuff. So he tosses all that in the ring. And the idea is the Iron Fingers are somewhere in one of those bags. And so early on, Taichi's digging through them all, trying to find it. There's like a boxing glove and some other stuff. Later on, Kanemaru gets his hands on one of the smaller paper bags, opens it. There's a bra inside. So it opens up with all this silly stuff. Yeah. But then there's a whole middle section where it's like a pretty decent tag match.
Actual tag match happens. Yeah. And then, like a lot of cool stuff, like double submission stuff, really hard hitting physical stuff. Like there's a whole bit where Zack Sabre Jr. is like absorbing all these blows. And then finally he collapses. He gets back up and he like doles some out himself. And then like the real silliness happens because Jado comes down. He's got the Iron Finger Glove.
Yeah.
And then it's just a Benny Hill comedy here.
It really
because
is.
Because he hands it off to Tama Tonga. Tama puts it on. Doku hits the ring. He hits Tama with an enziguri. Tama clobbers him with the glove. He tries to hit Taichi with it. Taichi kicks Tama's arm. The glove flies off. Taichi picks it up. He's about to put it on, which is a big moment. Tongaloa clobbers him from behind. Tama gets the glove back. Zack Sabre Jr. puts Tama in a sleeper hold. So Tama drops the glove. Taichi finally picks it up. And in this huge moment, like He-Man, you know, turning from Prince Adam into He-Man, puts on the glove and marks out.
Yeah. Looks like he transforms into a wild man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's now trance. They love these trance characters, these
seemingly
where they just sort of leave themselves. So he's about to hit Tama with it, but the ref comes to, tries to stop him. He pushes Taichi pushes the ref into the corner, hits Tongaloa. Jado then hits Zack Sabre Jr. with the kendo stick, so he goes down, and then he hits Taichi, but Taichi is so infused with power of the Iron Glove that he no-sells it, hits Jado with the glove. The ref is up. Tama Tonga is begging Taichi not to hit him with the glove. He charges at Taichi. Taichi decks him with the Iron Glove as the ref comes to, and then in a rare DQ, Gorillas of Destiny get the win here.
Yeah, then afterwards, like, Taichi's just decking everybody with the glove. Kanemaru comes in, tries to settle him down. Taichi takes a swing at him. Kanemaru ducks it. And Zack Sabre Jr. is over there, like, basically bear hugging Taichi, mm-hmm. trying to get him to calm down. Mm-hmm. And he just ends up collapsing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Taichi does in the middle of the ring.
This is goof city, man. This is
it
goof.
Was weird. This is so outside of what we usually expect from New Japan, this type of stuff.
Maybe
not
hey,
that it's bad. Like, I enjoyed it for the most part, so I like Taichi a lot.
They're like gearing up for like this AEW crossover thing, so they're getting more into the goofy stuff. AEW sometimes likes to get a little bit goofy sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe they're gonna do a DDT pro thing.
Could be.
Yeah.
Then we got our main event, Sho challenging Hiromu Takahashi for the junior heavyweight belt. You know, I gather this is kind of one of Hiromu's macro stories, overarching stories, because they said that he had the longest match, like junior heavyweight match, I think, at Wrestle Kingdom. This mm-hmm. is the longest junior heavyweight title match ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess he's doing an endurance thing.
Yeah.
Which you would think would eventually catch up with them in some respect, because this went 35 minutes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Again, not bad. But since there was no personal story that I sensed between the two of them, it was good.
Yeah.
I never felt I was invested in it, though.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on this one, man. I really wasn't into this match all that much. I was actually really looking forward to it. Maybe my expectations were too high. But to be honest with you, there was really nothing. There was nothing on the road, on any of the Road 2 stuff that I watched, that really would indicate, oh, wow, this is going to be great. It's just you'd see these two names and you figure it's going to be great. So, yeah, it was what it was. Yeah, but you could even tell, like, by the finish, I think it was like a Romu hit him with like a two time bombs.
Yeah.
And then he got the win with that. And the crowd really didn't even seem, you know, I know that they're not allowed to like shout or whatever, but like it just, there was no energy to any of this stuff,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is weird for a match with these guys.
Yeah. Afterwards, LP, he was doing commentary for the last two matches. He jumps over the barricade, starts going after Hiromu, starts loading up for a kick with his loaded boot. Bushi runs down to make the save. And
you
the
love
Ishimori
how he loads it up, too. He kayfabes the hell out of like getting whatever's in the boot to the right spot.
The exact right spot, yeah. So Ishimori runs down to kind of even the odds. LP goes for a kick. Hiromu ducks it, sends him and Ishimori from the ring, and the LP gets on the mic. He's like, I'm sick and tired of Hiromu making me and Taiji look like fools. Says, Hiromu, you didn't earn that title. This, I think he said, his BS company gave it to you, and I'm not leaving Japan till I take that title off you. Mm-hmm. And then Hiromu grabs a mic and challenges them to a junior heavyweight tag title match.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. We'll see if LIJ can pull that one out. After that, that was it for the show.
That was
last
night. Yeah.
Last night, along with the Enforcer, we watched Impact live on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/StephenLarson. It's always a good time on Tuesdays. And here's your results from that. We had multi-man tag action, Josh Alexander, Trey Miguel, Suicide, and Willie Mack taking on Blake Christian, Chris Bay, Daivari, and Ace Austin. The newly returned Trey Miguel tapped out Blake Christian to get the win for his team.
Yep.
Good guys there.
After that, Kimberly defeated ODB via roll-up after there was some business going on ringside between Jordan Grace, Jazz, and Deonna Purrazzo.
Yeah. After that, Jake something. That's actually what he's billed as these days. and Violent by Design, of course, Eric Young's Young Love group with the Confused Cowboy.
Yeah.
They had like a moment where they basically just take out. They threatened to basically break the neck of Cousin Jake there.
But it was like a recruiting tool, essentially, right?
Come be with us.
Yeah. After that, we had another Tony and Tony paid advertisement.
This was great because Tony Khan basically makes the realization that he is in fact this forbidden door and it swings both ways and he's open to new ideas, Larson. This was great stuff. He wants to do more of it.
After that, Nevaeh defeated Tasha Steeles by disqualification.
Mm-hmm. Black Taurus came to Impact.
Yeah, man,
great.
That was great.
And he beat the crap out of Caleb Conley.
Oh, wait, no, it wasn't Tasha Steeles. It was Kira Hogan, my bad.
Okay.
It's Kira Hogan, I believe.
Tasha Steeles was ringside.
Tasha Steeles interfered.
Yeah, that's right. James Storm and Chris Sabin versus the Good Brothers, Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows, ended in DQ after Matt Hardy sent Private Party down there to interfere a little bit. just to wonk their match.
And then after that, Scott D'Amore made the Impact tag title match at No Surrender a triple threat match, putting Storm and Sabin in along with the Good Brothers and Private Party. Right. Matt Hardy wasn't too happy about that.
Yeah. And then we had this really cheesy, super cheesy.
Speaking about a segment with no heat.
Contract signing between Tommy Dreamer and Rich Swann. Moose comes down and, you know, he's like, hey, I want title shot. And then they have the worst crowd audio that they pump in there with zero motivation. At least in Thunderdome, you got the Zoom screens up. So it's like, okay, maybe the audio is coming from that, even though it's not. No, it's not. This was so, and then Dreamer gives this really long-winded, cheesy promo at the end. It's supposed to be all like heart-wrenching or something, and like the crowd is all into it. This was so super cheesy, but
it was pretty silly. It's
Impact, so I don't care. It's still entertaining, you know, rather that than being boring, I guess.
Exactly. We got some hopefully not boring wrestling tonight. AEW, NXT. Let's do an AEW preview first off. Chris Jericho and MJF versus The Acclaimed.
That'll be good. We got Cody and Lee Johnson versus Peter Avalon and Cesar Bononi. Has he been on Dynamite before? He's been on Dark, I think.
Yeah, I don't think he's been on Dynamite, not as an active wrestler. Yeah, he was a lumberjack a couple weeks back. Women Eliminator Tournament kicks off. Layla Hirsch versus Thunder Rosa. This should be really good.
Should be really good. Also, we got Pac versus the oddly familiar Hollywood hunk Ryan Nemeth.
Yeah. We're going to get a Sting interview.
Again. This should be really good. Darby Allin versus Joey Janela. That should be...
For the TNT title, that should be good.
I hope nobody gets hurt.
Yeah, no. Hangman Page, he's going to say something.
Oh, that's good. And then in our main event, we got Kenneth Omega and Kenta versus Jon Moxley and Lance Archer. That should be very interesting.
So no DQ. I believe false count anywhere, too.
Oh, man.
That should get crazy. On NXT, go ahead.
He wants no part of Kenny Omega, dude. That's going to be interesting.
I know. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, over there on NXT, we'll be reviewing that tomorrow on our Twitch channel. Of course, tonight we'll be doing AEW. Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart taking on Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell in women's Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic Action.
Yes, and now we got some intrigue here going to the TakeOver. So Austin Theory is going to battle Kushida tonight after announcing Gargano injury. So this is from WWE.com. On Tuesday night, Austin Theory tweeted that Johnny Gargano will be unable to compete against him at TakeOver Vengeance Day. And that was the fault of Kushida. Mm-hmm. As a result, Austin has challenged Kushida to a match tonight with Gargano John out of action. What will this mean for NXT TakeOver in the future, the North American champion? This is totally a work, but they're actually like putting it out there somewhat like it might be real.
Yeah, I guess I'll just find out what happens. I mean, yeah, you think it's a work, but maybe he is out. Maybe he's out and they got to figure something else out.
I'm just assuming... taking it as a work until proven otherwise, because Austin Theory is the one who announced it.
Did you watch his little video in the car?
Mm-mm.
He's hilarious.
He's pretty funny.
It's like this whole The Way thing has opened up something I think a lot of people might have seen back in his like Evolve days or whatever, but I don't know. He's great. We also have Tommaso Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher going to be taking on the grizzled young veterans in the Dusty Cup semifinals.
Also, a Dusty Cup semifinal match, MSK to face Legado del Fantasma.
Cameron Grimes is going to return on NXT this week. That's fun.
Yeah, this was announced on WWE.com's Twitter. So it's backed by Tian Sha. Xia Li returns to action tonight. That should be great.
That should be really good. Karrion Kross and Scarlett are also going to show up tonight on NXT.
And then finally, NXT champion Finn Balor to come face-to-face with Peter Dune.
Right on. Should be a lot of fun tonight all around. Hopefully, he'll join us for AEW recap tonight on Twitch about 7:30 Pacific, 10:30 Eastern. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We appreciate it. Until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Goodbye.
Help support Going In Raw today by becoming a Friendo Club TV member. You'll get access to new bonus episodes every week, including Friendo Club Arcade, Live Power Rank, Vintage 10 for the Wins, and Ask Steven Larson. Get access to Friendo Club TV today by becoming a $5 and up patron at patreon.com/Steven Larson, by throwing us a sub at twitch.tv/Steven Larson, or by clicking join at youtube.com/Steven Larson.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.